That's, we're recording this for a reason. If you don't know, go back and listen to yourself.
We'll do the chazar. Yeah, yeah.
We're here about
okay, here we are. Rolling the fourth parak of Challah. Brace yourself. Here we go. Okay, so the topic is about combining small doughs together to make it chayav. Remember that the shear, the Tanakhama there, we've seen the Chacham say it's 5/4 of kav. So, and we saw in the Mishnah, in the second parak, we saw that if you have two, let's say kav, 1 1/4 kav, in other words, if you have one kav dough, one kav dough, they're not going to combine. If you put them in the same pan and together, according to the Tanakhama, according to the Chacham, unless yeshuchu, unless they're so intertwined that when you pull one away, it'll take some of the dough of the other with it, so that they'd be like, you know, literally biting one into the other, you know, pulling apart. And we saw that Rabbi Eliezer held even in the same basket, even after baking is enough to combine it. Maybe they need to be touching, maybe not. But that was what we saw up to now. Now we're going to put some further restrictions on that. We're going to discuss how this applied. That applied when it had one woman, one owner with two doughs. Now we're going to ask, what happens if you have two separate women? Will we still allow them to combine even in those situations? So it says, Shtei Nashim, you have two women. She'asu Shnei Kavim. Each one makes a kav to herself of dough. V'nago b'zeh b'zeh, and they're touching one to the other. Afilu hem min echad, even if they're from the same species, paturin. And it didn't speak it out, but it means even if it's that same machlokas. So if the two doughs are intertwined and actually, you know, one will pull the other apart when they separate them, even so, if the two different women, it's considered two different doughs, and they're not going to be combining one to the other. Okay? Now, there's a deek to be made from the Mishnah here. It sounds like we're talking about a total of two kavim, two total measures, right? So it's a bit of a discussion in the Mefarshim what exactly this mission, who this mission is going like. The reason why is because the shear shouldn't be two kav, and it should be 1 1/4 kav each. The next mission I'll explain in English, so I'll never finish this off though. So it could be that there's a machlokas that we haven't spoken out at all, we haven't seen it, but in Edius, Hillel has a shita that the shear isn't 1 1/4 kav, it's 2 kav. So it could be that this mission is going like Hillel, maybe. Okay, either way. Vizman shem shel eish isha achas, if they're from the same woman, however, min b'mino chayiv, if you have, like we saw before, if you have two in the same pan, as long as they're the same min, meaning it's wheat and wheat together, then they have to be intertwined. V'shlo b'mino patr, but if you have two different species, and if you have a wheat loaf and a barley loaf, even if they're touching and intertwining, it doesn't matter, they're two different loaves and they can't combine. Now, if you recall, we said that in the first Mishnah we said that the different kinds of grains of the five species are mitzdarf. I'll explain the next mission in English, don't worry, let's finish this one. So since this, it said it's the mitzdarf, so here it's saying it's not mitzdarf, so the answer is that if the mitzdarf, the idea of them being combining in the first Mishnah, was if you have one dough made of two flour, that you poured in, you know, like 10 cups of wheat flour and 10 cups of barley flour, mixed it up and poured water in, so it's like a single dough. Then it's mitzdarf, it combines. But here, you've got essentially a total clean, separate batch of flour made of wheat and flour of dough made of wheat and dough made of barley. That won't combine. That won't combine, that's two different minim, even if they're intertwined. So the only time in the second parak where we said they do combine is if it's one woman and they're interlocking to the point they'll pull each other apart, and it's of the same species. Okay? Mm-hmm. Fine. Now Mishnah base. We're now going to now go with English. So now we have to define what makes something the same species. We saw in Kilayim, if you recall, that really there are five different species, right? The five species of grain, again, are wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. But we saw that they're sort of like, kind of like two subfamilies, if you will. So when we say min bamino, in the previous Mishnah, of two different kinds of doughs, one of wheat and one of barley, wouldn't combine, the truth is that we're going to ask now, what's going to happen if, let's say, one is wheat and one is spelt? Because wheat and spelt are sort of the same family. So it's going to say inside here, it says, Hachitim, if you have a dough made of wheat flour.
Ezu.
So Ezu min b'mino, yeah. What defines two of the same species combining? So Hachitim, when it comes to wheat flour, Enim mitzdarfus imakol, it will not combine with anything, that was wheat's its own species by itself, El imakusmin, except for spelt. So in other words, if you have one thing of wheat with barley, oats, or rye, not going to combine, but wheat and spelt, two doughs of wheat and spelt together will combine. Wheat and spelt, you've seen, are similar to one another. We saw that in Kilayim. Hasa orim, when it comes to barley, mitzdarfas imakol, barley is considered to be a member of the the family of the rest of the five species, chutz min achitim, except for wheat. As you've seen many times before, wheat and barley are like two different cereals altogether. They can't combine. So there's a funny diak we made out of here, which is that spelt goes both ways. Okay, spelt it can be combined with wheat and with barley. Why that should be, I don't know. It's certainly not consistent with what we've seen elsewhere. But here, it gets us similar enough. I can't say more than that. And Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, he says, Shar haminim mitzdar from zemzeh. He says the other minim, meaning the oats, rye, and...
Oats and rye,
correct. And really, and spelt, I guess, can combine with each other. In other words, it's telling you, spelt and oats, or rye and oats, or rye and spelt are all combinable. So why do you need to say that? Because there's no obvious transitive property. There's no lima to be made that they're from two clean subfamilies, since you see that spelt goes both ways. There's a question. So that he's resolving that question. So it's going to come out then, to summarize, the bottom line is, when it comes to combining those for the halachas of challah, we say it's wheat can combine only with spelt, barley can combine with anything except wheat, and other ones can combine whatever they want except for wheat. Right? Wheat is by itself, unless that was spelt. Okay, great. Okay, now Mishnah Gimel. We said that two loaves can't combine together. It's from different species. But what's going to happen if you have two loaves that are combinable, like two wheat loaves, but what's combined them, the link, the bridge between the two, is a different species. Like you have rice in the middle. So you have wheat, which if they were together would be good, but the problem is they're not physically touching because you have a rice loaf in the middle of them. Okay? So it's a shnei kavin, you have two batches of dough, each one is a kav amount. The kav orez, and you also have a third batch that's made out of rice. O kav truma b'amta. Or similarly, if it would be a kav of truma, because just like rice is exempt from challah, so too is truma exempt from challah. I feel bad that I'm not explaining it so fully, but we're just under time pressure. And sorry, I feel bad. What to do? You jumped in the middle of a deep thing. Tomorrow, hopefully, we'll start something new, which will be clear. You're in the thick of it. So truma is exempt from challah, and so is orez. So is rice exempt from challah? So what happens if you have two that are chayv and an exempt one in the middle? So the Tanakam here says enam and starfin. It doesn't connect. If they're not physically connecting, it won't work. Okay. Davash nitla chalaso ba'emta. Now, however, if you have, let's say, three batches of dough, I should say. And the one in the middle bridging, the two on the outside are chayav, the third in the middle that's bridging it, isn't something that's intrinsically exempt, like truma or rice. Instead, it's a regular wheat batch, but the thing is, this wheat batch has already been taken, chal has been taken from it. So it's exempt. But it's not intrinsically exempt, it just happens to be exempt because you haven't taken the chal from it. So now if you lump them all together, so davash nitlach chalaso ba'emtza, the thing in the middle is something that chal has been taken from it, mitzdarfen, then they will be combined, shekvar nischayev b'chala. Because the thing is really chayev and chala, it's just that it happens to not be chala now. So if they're intertwined, to the point that Yeshuchah, that if they're like really, really intermingled, that you pull them apart, then they would rip apart. So basically you've done is you've essentially you've reconstituted a dough that has some potter in it, but lots of chayev in it, enough chayev to make the shear, so it's one big batch of dough, they're intertwined, it's chayev. Okay. Okay, Mishnah Dalad. Okay, I need to explain this for a second here. It's another similar kind of case. The issue here, though, is you have two loaves combining, two batches of dough combining. One of the batches is made from flour that's yashan, that means from last year's crop, and part of it is made, the second dough is made from chadash, that means this year's crop. As we said that the omer, basically, without getting the details again, the second day of Pesach is sort of the international dateline, if you will, for the crops when it comes to grain crops. Okay? So, and there's a separate rule that you have to treat each of your two crops, each of your annual crops, separately in terms of tithing. And that will become, with Hafrashas in general, like we had some big nafkamim, you know, they did big issues, for example, between Maaser Sheni and Maaser Ani. But here we learn from Challah, when you're taking Challah is a gift to give to a Kohen. We have Kohanim in the room today. Right? The gift from the Gdol, you give to the Kohanim. So, you can't take from this year's batch on last year's batch. That's how it's learned out. Okay. So now the question is going to be, even though you can't take from this year's batch and last year's batch, what happens if you have two batches of dough? Each one of them isn't big enough to constitute the chiyuv of challah. Each one's, let's say, only one kav instead of one and a quarter kav. But you combine those two loaves together. So even though you clearly can't take from one on behalf of the other, do you still say now you have two kabin worth of dough here, and that's enough to constitute the chiyuv of challah? Is that enough now you have to take challah from the whole batch, even though you wouldn't be able to take from one on the other? So that's the question, and here's the answer. Kav chadash v'kav yashan. You have two kabin of dough that are intertwined, right? Rabbi Yishmael Omer, if that's the case, yitzol mina emtza. He says, it's now you've had a two kav batch of flour dough, that's enough to be obligated to take challah out of it, but you should take it from the middle where they connect. Why the middle? That we will be taking from each at the same time. That's right. So in your middle, you take your piece out, some of it will be from the yashan, some will be from the chadash, and that will be good. Even though we said that the shear, remember, the amount to take of challah for the whole dough is how much? If you're a private person? 1/24, very good. But midoraisa, there's no shear. So as long as you get some, a little bit, the Torah only demands any amount, so therefore... Exactly. Both sides. Exactly. So even though, I guess, in a perfect world, you'd pull 1/24 of each one, that's obviously asking for quite a lot of precision, but so what? If you miss it, you do your best, but if you don't, it doesn't matter, because as long as you've got a little bit of each, it'll be pater midoraisa. Okay. Fine. Yeah, fine. Okay, Mishnah Dalet. Full class today, yeah? Sorry? I guess you wait until you wait with that dough until Pesach. Yeah. Maybe who says next Pesach? Maybe Pesach is tomorrow. We're talking about right before. Maybe. Listen, grain. Remember the ghost story of Joseph. Grain. If you keep grain kernels, if you don't actually grind them, but after threshing and winnowing, it lasts a long time. Remember that was Joseph kept it in the storage. They're going to keep it for 7 years. That was the plan. It lasts. So if you keep in your silo from last year and then you grind it, so the flour now will be fresh. It's only once you grind it that it's now susceptible to moisture and will go and, you know, it's going to get moldy. But if you dry it out, it lasts a long time. In fact, you can even see, now we're a little late in the season, but you certainly could see, like a couple months ago, in the fields, wheat from last year that was sitting still in the stalk. Like it had dried out, it was still, but you could take it out and I'm sure you could grind it and do it and it sits around. Preserves. In fact, not only that, I was reading a book to reveal my nerdiness. I was reading a book about like the cultivation of crops, like in antiquity, and they still find these things. They still find, you know, they can still find them. They still sit around. I don't know if they're very edible anymore, but it's dry, it preserves. So that's the idea. So if you had last year's and this year's combined, you'd have to wait to eat your yasha until after the Omer. Okay. Mishnah Dalet. That's right, sorry. Yeah, so Rabbi Shmuel said take from the middle. V'chachamim osrim. The chacham say, no, you can't take it from the middle. That won't do. Now, to explain what's going on here, once again, it's a little complicated. Here's the idea. Rabbi Shmuel, who allowed them to combine, it sort of seems a little counterintuitive. Either they can't combine or they could combine. On the one hand, you're letting them combine to make the requisite amount of two carbon, but on the other hand, one can't take from the other one, so they seem like distinct entities. So Rabbi Yishmael learns it from a kol v'chomer. This is kol v'chomer. He learns it, I can't even translate it. So he learns it like this, that when it comes to truma, that's the tithe you take from your produce to give to the kohen, so you're also not allowed to take from, if you have some grain that's attached to the ground, mechubar, and some grain that's talush, that's detached from the ground, you can't take from one and the other. We learned that in Trumas. And if you do, it won't work, because you really can't take tithes from what's attached to the ground still. However, if you speak out, like a Tanai, you make a condition, you say, listen, the truma I'm taking now from the detached should also exempt the attached grain, once I finally go and attach it, that will work. If you declare it ahead of time, then it like works, like retroactively it works. So he says it's the same thing here too. If you make such a, you know, declaration, you could, it's as if you made the declaration by the challah, by the two batches of yashan and chadash also, so to speak, that Sorry, I apologize, that's not right. It's not right. it's all right. It's not the Kol V'Chomer here. That's another Kol V'Chomer. Sorry. The Kol V'Chomer here is like this. He says, listen, the Kol V'Chomer like this. If when you come, okay, the Kol V'Chomer is like this. If you can combine wheat and spelt together, wheat and spelt, which we saw a minute ago, which are clearly two different minim, one's spelt and one's wheat, but they're combinable because they're similar enough. So for sure, Chadash and Yashan, wheat and wheat, just from two different crops, is similar enough to combine. So that's his Kol V'Chomer. But in other words, Midoraisa, they should be combinable. Just there's a technical problem of not eating from one against the other. Okay. If that's the case, so that's what he says, it'll combine. Just be careful to take from the middle so that you get from both batches so you don't have to take from one on the other. So the rabbis now agree with that, Kol V'Chomer, and therefore they say, Midoraisa, you could do like Rabbi Shmuel and take in the middle. The problem is they're afraid that if you learn from that, you'll think, oh, you could take from Chadash and Yashan. Right? That's obviously what you're doing here. You're taking from this year's batch and last year's batch, which you're not allowed to do. So the rabbis say they forbid it, not because it doesn't work, but because people will learn the wrong halacha. It's like, you know, it's a funny thing you're doing. You're misleading yourself. So therefore, they forbid it. Now, right? Okay. Hanot el chala min akav. Now, what happens if this? Sorry, this is where I got confused before. Now I'm speaking it again. What happens if you only have one kav, you have 2 liters of dough, and that's exempt from challah still. What happens if you take challah now, and then after you take the challah, add more dough to the batch to bring it to chiyuv? So, is that going to work or not work at all? Okay, so that's the question. So we say here, is that going to be effective if you're taking challah or not? Yeah. Yeah. In other words, you've taken challah from this dough.
It's like challah on a condition.
That's right. Exactly what it's like. You're making challah, so to speak. You didn't speak out this tonight, but you're essentially saying, I'm taking challah now to add later.
Right.
Which you'll see in a second why I said what I said before incorrectly. I got mixed up. So here we say, hanotel challah min akav. If you take challah from a kav, a dough that's not got the amount that's required yet, Rabbi Kiva omer chala. Rabbi Kiva says it still works, assuming you add more to it afterwards. The chum om eno chala. The chum say it doesn't work. So okay, let me speak it out now. So here's Rabbi Kiva's Kol V'Chomer. That's what I said before. Well, incorrectly. Now it's correct. He makes the Kol V'Chomer from truma. He says when it comes to truma, if you have some attached mechubur and some talush detached, so you're not supposed to take one from the other. But if you take your tithe from your detached, and you say it also is going to exempt the attached, to make that explain out that tonight, then it will work. The attached stuff will be exempt. So he says it's the same thing here. It's as if you said, I'm taking challah now, and I'm going to combine the rest of it later on. And he says that's so compelling that you don't even have to speak it out. It's like, it's obvious what you're doing. You're taking the challah now for the whole batch. You just haven't yet put it in. And once you combine it, it'll be big enough. So then the challah you took before you combined the original kav, get an extra bit, it will be effective. So therefore, Rabbi Kiva says, challah, it works.
And that is something that in a truma case, the truma is chayv in truma, which is known as a mitzvah, right?
But it's not, remember, the chiyuv technically doesn't kick in until after Gemar Melachim, things attach to the ground, so it's still pater. There's no truma taken from attached. But But since it's going to be chayv later on, he says if that'll work by truma, it'll work by challah also. You certainly, there's no... This is something I should speak out as a general rule. A Kol V'Chomer is one of the Yud Gimel Midah Shatar Nedresh Ben. A Kol V'Chomer means, a fortiori argument, it means you learn from A to B, if A is always more strict than B. So if you see there's some rule that you only know by B, A is always more strict than B. So if you find some rule that some stringency that applies to B, and you just have a question mark by A, does it or does it not apply, you can assume it definitely applies to A, because A is always more strict than B. Now that sounds eminently logical, but it actually isn't necessarily logical. Now what I mean by that, it's one of the Yud Gimel Midos, meaning that the Torah is written in a code, and there's 13 ways to unravel the code that are called the Yud Gimel Midos. Now, if it would just be logical, you wouldn't need those Yud Gimel Midos. These are the Torah says, like it's any code, like God gave us an encoded document, and he says, here are the keys, the key to unlock the code. So Kol v'chomer is one of those. Kol v'chomer, in other words, need not be... I'm not saying it's illogical. I'm just saying it need not be compellingly logical. Right? If I give you a text and I say, you know, the message is you have to take every third letter and put those together, that's what I'm trying to tell you. So, okay, then I told you that's how you do it, so then that's how it goes. Doesn't mean that, you know, if the message that comes out isn't necessarily consistent with the main text, you know, the text and I say take every third letter, so it may not, even if it's not consistent necessarily, it's acceptable because I'm telling you that's the way it should be learned out, giving you the code to unlock the text. So that's how all the Yigul Midos are. So some of them are much more obviously not, some are much more obviously just like an arbitrary code, like, you know, if you have two things that contradict and like, or a miyut, like, you know, and things that come in extra examples and generic examples and double examples, there's rules. How do you resolve those? So kol v'chomer is the one that always confuses people because kol v'chomer sounds like it's logical, right? But it's not necessarily logical. So here is a reasonably good example of that, where there's no reason, everything we've learned up to now, if I'd have asked you beforehand, if I'd have said, listen, when it comes to challah, if you have an amount that's not obligated, because less than the required amount, there's only one kav, and you take the challah now, and then you add the more dough afterwards, will it be effective? So everyone here would say, no, that doesn't make any sense, because that's totally inconsistent with anything else we've learned anywhere else in the Torah. That's not how it works. If at the time you took it was exempt, so it's exempt. It doesn't help you anything, right? We've seen many examples like that in the past. You know, they warned the rabbis, oh, you better get... We actually saw in our Masechta, we saw an example. We said if you give it as flour, then it's, and the Kohen keeps the flour, it's Gezel B'yado, he's like a thief, he has to give back the flour and recombine it, and if he doesn't, he has to take tithes from his. Remember, because it's not effective. The fact that you fix it up post facto doesn't help. That's how the Torah always works. Here, it's different, but the reason it's different is not for any good logical reason. It's just that he's applying the Kol V'Chomer. He's applying like one of these technical rules you can apply to the Torah. Since Challah is called Truma, right? They're really a package deal, exegetically a package deal, because it's called Truma. And here, they're... When it comes to Trum, you have this kind of weird din, which you learn out from Sukkim, so they apply that same weird din of you can make a verbal condition and exempt your future Truma on current Truma, even though it's Mayit Chayv. So then the same thing should apply to Challah. That's Rabbi Akiva's approach. But you understand it's not... My point is, it's not compellingly logical. It's just one... It's a Kol V'Chomer. Kol V'Chomer means it's like a... It's a one rule, one way to unlock the code. If you want to be technical, usually, just so you should know, usually when you don't have this in Mishnah as much, but in the Bavli you have it all the time, there's two terms that often seem to use interchangeably, Kol V'Chomer and Kol Shekain. Kol V'Chomer is this, that's this rule I told you, that's not necessarily logical. A Kol Shekain is, all the more so, is logical. In other words, in English, when I say, you know, you can buy a lollipop for $1, so of course you could buy a lollipop for $2. It will for sure be effective, right? But that's a kol shekain for sure. If it works with a little bit, for sure it'll work if you have more. But when you're learning from A to B, since really now getting abstract for one more second, between any two things A and B, there's an infinite number of similarities and an infinite number of, if you can say infinite number, and an infinite amount of differences between any two things, right? Between me and you, we can find endless numbers of similar things and endless numbers of differences. That's true of anything. So when you're going to learn from A to B, you can always say, the only question is going to be, when I say something similar, when I say you and I are similar, I mean the things that count, right? Obviously. And what the things that count is obviously a subjective factor. I could say you're similar, I could say you and I are very different, or I could say you and a chimpanzee are very similar, because I'm focusing on what's significant and what's insignificant, right? So same thing with Kol V'Chomer, the rabbis are going to tell you that you know, Truma and Chala are similar enough to make this Kol V'Chomer, but you need sort of some tradition to say what is significant and insignificant, as opposed to Kol Shekain, which is sort of quantitative, then there's no Mesorah required, right? If one elephant's heavier than me, then for Kol Shekain, two elephants are heavier than me. There's no additional subjectiveness required. This is a long discussion, but anyways, that's the background of why this Kol V'Chomer works, even though it's not compellingly logical. V'chacham chayvin, v'chacham say that because of the reasons I told you, they reject the whole Kol V'Chomer. They say you can't learn from Truma to Challah like that. That doesn't make any sense at all. When it comes to Truma, it's the same thing. It just happens to have not been, like, it's for sure going to be Chayv and Truma sooner or later. It's just a function of when you detach it from the ground. Like, and you're saying, and you have this concept of onus and maaser. You know, this Truma, produce attached to the ground is Chayv and Truma, just not yet. Whereas when it comes to Challah, dough isn't Chayv in Challah unless you combine it to the proper shear. And here it didn't have the shear. So it's not, you know, it's not a inevitably, you follow the difference? Everyone understand why? To give the whole Hakdama, you understand why? Because the rabbis, Rabbi Akiva is saying it's, forget logic, so to speak, exegetically you can learn Trumah Chala, and this is the comparison. The rabbis say that's, they're not comparable, because it's a Kol V'Chomer never flows if it's like, doesn't necessarily flow if it's, you know, logically incomparable. And here they say it's logically incomparable. It's true that the halachas of chala can be learned from the halachas of truma, but they're not comparable in this factor, because I'm just repeating myself again. When it comes to truma, every piece of grain is chayav in truma sooner or later. Just a technical point, you haven't detached it yet. So if you say, I'm taking now back what I will detach later, it'll work. Whereas when it comes to chala, if you didn't combine it yet, it's not yet chayav, and if you don't combine it, it will never be chayav. So who says you can now attach to uncombined chala? So the rabbis reject that. And therefore it comes out, V'nimtza chumro kulo. It'll come out in the Rabbi Akiva's chumra. What was his chumra? His chumra was, if you take...
I think it's
misunderstood. Skip back. What's the matter? I'm sorry. Correct. V'cham omrim enochala. V'cham say, it's not effective. Correct. Okay, Mishnah Hay. Mishnah Hay really just continues on the exact same thought of Mishnah Dalin. It says, shnei kaven. You have two kaven together. You had two single chala doughs, and now you took, which neither one is chayav and chala yet. You have two doughs, and you put, but you take chala from each. So Rabbi Akiva said, if you combine them, like then it'll be effective retroactively, and the chum say no. So what happens if you take two kaven, you each one is exempt, you pull your chala of each, and then you combine them to a big dough. So what's going to be? So we already established this principle in the previous Mishnah. According to the Chachamim, well, it wasn't effective before, and I have to take it now. According to Rabbi Akiva, it is effective before you combine it. When you combine it, you'll be exempt. So combine them afterwards, you don't have to do anything. So Mishnah inside says, Shnei Kaven, you had two batches. Shnid l'chala so shalzeh b'fnei atzmo. You took the first one's chala before it was the requisite amount. V'shalzeh b'fnei atzmo. You took chala from the second one before it had its requisite amount. V'chazar v'as and is achas. And then you go and combine them two into one big one. Rabbi, the two separate doughs you take into one, no, two separate doughs you combine into one big dough now, and the challah has been removed already before it was chayev. So Rabbi Akiva will say pater. Rabbi Akiva has exempted this now combined bigger challah, the bigger dough I should say, because the challah has been taken already, like you said in the previous one. And the rabbi said it's not effective before it's got the requisite amount. So therefore the chum chayev, the chum say you have to still take challah from your combined dough, because now, only now, it's finally chayev because you have the full amount. Well, they're nothing. Remember, so according to the rabbis, you removed it before any chiyuv of challah kicked in, so it'll never have a chiyuv of challah. This is a good point to bring out. If you had a 1.5 kaven of dough, so now it's chayv and challah, and you decide to take a piece off it, well, that piece is chayv and challah now. The fact that you have to exempt it sooner or later, right? But in the case, but if you have a normal dough of only one kaven, it'll never be chayv and challah ever. So what happened was, before it ever got to the full amount, it was still only one kav, he took a piece off. So this main, the big batch is pater from challah until you go and combine it, and the little piece for sure is pater from challah. Now if you go and make the big batch into a bigger batch, so that big batch, which is now a bigger batch, would be chayav and challah, but the little piece is divorced, it never was a batch of dough big enough to be chayav.
You put it back in, could you take it out again?
You put it back in, then it's part of the big dough, it'll be just bottled to the big dough.
And you could take it out from there?
Yeah, from the whole collective amount, for sure. So then it says, Nimsa Chumra Kulo. It comes out that Rabbi Akiva's Chumra is a Kula. What does that mean? That means that Rabbi Akiva said, if you have only one Kav amount and you pull the Chala off, so he says, you treat this like Chala in every way, which means only a Kohen could eat it and you can't make a Tamei, and you eat it and you're not a Kohen, you get Misa at the hands of heaven, yada, 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 bad stuff. So he's Machmir. And the rabbis say, what's the big deal? You take that piece of dough before it's Chayv, it's just any old dough, eat it yourself, bake it and cook it, and nothing required. So he's the strict one, but here it comes out he's mekel, because he says that when you combine it, you need not take another batch. Whereas the rabbi said, no, you need to take a new challah because now it's finally chayav. Yeah, the truth is, Mishnah Hay has no great chedushim over Mishnah Dalet. And unfortunately, I actually want to ask, like, why do you need a Mishnah Hay at all? Mishnah Dalet told us its principles. So there are a couple answers given. Tosfos Yeshanim, we'll just say one. Tosfos Yeshanim answers like this: that you might think that Rabbi Akiva was only talking to the rabbanim. In other words, he's saying, listen, once you're taking challah and you're going to combine it later on, you might think the rule is you might not know what to do, so we're being strict both ways. But he might say, for sure, really, middle or raisa from the Torah, it's exempt. And when you now go and combine two small batch into one big batch, for sure now the Torah demands that you tithe it again. So if the Rebbe Akiva would say, in that case, for sure, take a second challah. So Kamash Malan, you hear from here, no, that's not the case. The Rebbe Akiva held that really it works even on a deraisa level, and therefore when you combine it afterwards, it's totally exempt. That's the chiddush, which is actually a big chiddush. Okay, fine. I don't know if we can do this for 10 days. It's very stressful for us to be rushing like this. And I also feel like it's not clear, because I'm rushing.
A few more days.
Okay, we'll see what we can do. So, okay, Mishnah Hey. Sorry, Mishnah Vav. Okay. And it's the hard one. Okay, Mishnah Vav is talking about Chalas Demai. Okay, Demai is the... If you purchase produce from an Amaret, someone who can't be relied upon to take proper tithes. So, we've seen... The rabbi said that you can. They made fixed rules. You know, we actually saw it at the end of last Mishnah and the last Masechta. Since Yochanan Kohen Gadol came around, we no longer ask people. We didn't ask the merchants, you know, is it or isn't it tithed? We have fixed rules. We don't ask, we just do. So the rule was that we said when it comes to Truma, we assume that Amma Arts did, that they did take the Truma off. Why did they take it off? So you give two reasons, like that are also compatible. One reason was that eating truma is bad news, right? There's death at the hands of heaven, so that's bad news. So no one wants to poison their clients. So therefore, they'll take their tithes. They take the truma off. And another reason given is that truma, anyways, you take even one little speck of truma, it exempts the whole harvest. So what's the big deal? They take a little speck and exempt your truma. So we never assume that Amarts would let food into the food supply if they had truma in it, right? However, the other things we said, like mice or mice or shani, they're not so strict about that, and it costs them too much money, you can't rely on them, they're not going to give 20% of their produce for nothing. So, that we tithe out of doubt. All the halachas of demai apply. Now, we're talking now about challah of demai, which means ostensibly you're buying dough from an amaretz, he made the dough, and the same, now, so we're going to say, well, it's demai, because we don't know, did he or didn't he take the tithe of challah off of it. So, okay, logic would suggest that the same thing that applies to truma should apply to challah. Not for like technical exegetical reasons, but just because the same exact svaras apply. In other words, challah also, just like truma, is bad news if you eat it. And second of all, you take the littlest mouth and you exempt the loaf and the dough. So what's the big deal? Logic would say we should assume that the regular amaret would take challah off also. Okay. If you run that line of reasoning, the mission doesn't make much sense. That's a problem. Okay? So the Rishonim have lots of approaches to this Mishnah. I'll give you essentially two of them. The Bar Tanura essentially learns that Demai is it's a regular Demai case, and essentially what you're going to have to say, he learned like the Rush, and maybe like the Meiri, that so what? That logic makes sense, but I guess they weren't necessarily as strict when it came to challah removal from Demai, and therefore you have to be worried about it. And the Rambam doesn't accept that. The Rambam, the Perish Mishnah, says, no way, logic, classic Rambam. I don't know, classic. The Rambam says that the Sfarah must apply, and therefore the Mishnah here can't be talking about Demai. That's what I don't know. With classic Rambam, usually the Rambam takes the words as they mean, but here he says Demai doesn't mean Demai, it's a borrowed term, instead of the technical term Demai. It means just Demai in general, remember, if you remember, means Demai, what is this? So he learns that Demai is a borrowed term, and all it really means is you have suffix, though that's a suffix if challah needs to be taken from it. So demai doesn't mean demai at all, according to the Rambam. It means just a dough that you're not sure. You have a question mark if or if not challah needs to be taken from it. So again, this Mishnah could take us an hour because there's so many, however you learn it, there's so many kashas. But we're not going to do any of that. We're just going to now. That's the issues on the table. At least that's the first level of issues on the table. So we say now, notel adam kdei challah me'isa. You know, let me speak it outside first. So here's what the Mishnah is going to say. The Mishnah is going to say like this. So if you want to be careful not to, you're stuck. We don't know what to do about challah and not challah. What you should do, and remember, by the way, that challah has to be kept b'tahara. But if you've got an amaret using it, it's probably tameh. So you don't know what to do. So the eighth of the Mishnah is going to be, is a person can set aside a separate dough all to itself, that he knows is tahur and he knows is chayv and challah. He'll say, every time I get my demai batch of dough, either demai meaning he bought from amaret, or demai meaning use the question mark if it's tithe or not tithe, or you know, suffix, not whatever the suffix is. So then I'm going to take my challah from this certain batch on behalf of this batch, and then be for sure safe in knowing that I'm taking challah, and I'll give that b'tahara to the Kohen. Okay, that's what the gist is here. There are going to be lurking problems, which I'm not going to address here, but the lurking problems are going to be, you can't usually take things, if something is, things of two different status of chiyuv, you can't necessarily take the one on behalf of the other. I don't want to grapple with that now, it's too complex for the minute. But the point is, that's the case. The Mishnah, so the Mishnah is going to say that is effective, as long as your batch that you set aside, but tahara to use is like your one size fits all, you know, your source of tahor chala, that will be effective as long as it's still edible by human beings. Because remember, obviously, it's sitting around. After days, it's going to become inferior quality, and usually you're not supposed to give Kohen inferior quality gifts. Remember that. But here, we'll be lenient, because Ein Beira, no choice. We're not going to make a new batch every time. So as long as it's still humanly edible, we'll let it be a source to exempt the questionable dough. And also, we will allow you to take it from that batch, even though it's not mukaf. Remember, we had the issue of mukaf has to be close together. So here, we don't want, obviously, if one's tummy and one's tar, we don't want them touching each other. So usually we said, if you have a tummy and a tar, you couldn't take one from the other. But here, we're being lenient, and we're saying we're allowing you to do it because you have no choice. That's the Mishnah outside. Okay, inside. So it says, notel adam kdei chala me'isa, shelo hurma chalasa. You're allowed to take a batch of challah from a dough that hadn't yet had its challah taken from it, la'sosa b'tahara, to make it like a tahor batch, you know, a clean, certain tahor batch, li'os mafresh aleh, to use it, to pull from it, the holech, like an ongoing basis, challah's demai, the challah you need to take from a demai batch of dough, ajitisarach, and you can use that batch you set aside as vadai challah dough until it goes bad on you, until it goes moldy. As long as it's humanly edible, it's still okay. Shechalas demai, because when it comes to taking challah from demai, which means either you bought it, the dough from an amaretz, or suffik challah, you can take it from it. Nitelis min atahor ala tame, the rabbis are lenient here and let you indeed take it tahor from tame. And also bishlo min amukaf, they didn't make you touch them together, because even though you usually need mukaf here, they allowed you not to, because so you could take challah altogether. Okay, fine. We're doing warm Mishnah anyways, okay? Just so we can keep on track. Tomorrow, don't panic, tomorrow, we'll finish the Masechta tomorrow, we'll start Orla, and it'll be much more like, the beginning, it'll be clear from the beginning, if you want to come back and give it a second whack tomorrow. Okay, but today, we have one more Mishnah to do, we're going over time, I'm sorry. So, the topic here is Surya. So Surya, the Mishnaic Surya, is effectively modern-day Syria. It's just the north of Israel. And if you recall, it has a special halachic status. What's its halachic status? It's like this. Although the Torah allows for Israel, the land of halachic Israel, to be expanded, if there's a national expansion and like a national conquest and annexation, so the new lands that if Israel, we have a king and we wage a war, we decide we're taking over Jordan and we incorporate Jordan into our territory, so then Jordan becomes part of Israel and becomes all the laws of that apply to Israel will also extend to Jordan. Okay? So that will be...
Today it's Ramat Golan.
Oh, exactly.
That's Surya.
Yeah, Surya's already Ramat Golan?
Ramat Golan,
yeah. Okay, I'm not sure how far south it goes. I'm assuming from Ksiv, we'll see tomorrow. Ksiv, which I guess Tuk is, yeah, you're right, Islam. Yeah. So, the point is that if we make a national war and we expand our territory and we annex the new territory, so then the new territory is part of Halachic Eretz Yisrael, which means that will be obligated in Shemitah and, you know, Trumas and Maestros, and so on. Okay? Now, because the territory that God promised Abraham is enormous. It goes all the way to Iraq. So there's lots of room for expansion. Okay? I don't actually pass through. True, I'm not sure if Jordan is true like that. Ask me, maybe it's to the north. It's like it's to Levant and then off to the east towards Iraq. But in any case, leave that alone for a second. The story is, for sure, Syria, modern-day Syria, is within their bounds, and if the Jews would have taken it over and annexed it, normally it'd be Eretz Yisrael proper. The thing is, the Jews did, for a while, in the First Temple period, own Syria, Syrian region, but how did they acquire it? They acquired it by King David took it over with his own armies, before Israel had been finished its complete, the land of Israel had completed its incorporation, or its establishment, before Israel was finalized its borders. So it was for those technical reasons, although David did take it over, it's not considered to be like a national expansion of the nation, it's considered to be David and his private army went and conquered the place and took it back for the Jews. That being the case, it's not halachic Israel. And really, Midoraisa, Syria, since it's only David and his army conquered it, but not the nation conquered it, really from the Torah, it's exempt. It's exempt from everything. Everything that the land, the mitzvahs that depend on the land. However, since it was part of Israel, after all, like it is today in the Ramat Golan, and so the rabbi said, we're gonna treat it as if it's Israel, so people shouldn't get all mixed up. And you know, the agricultural laws that apply in Israel will apply rabbinically to that region also. Okay, that's the background. So the question is, how far do you go? Okay, this mission is also a little complicated, but we'll say it clear, hopefully. So it says Yisrael, if you have a Jew, Shahayu Arisin Legoyim Besuria, and he's an Aris. An Aris is a sharecropper. If you remember, there's two kinds of sharecroppers. It's actually Machlokas, if it's talking to one or both types. But for now, let's just simply say it. Sharecropper is someone who works someone else's land in exchange for a piece of the produce. So a Jew was working in a non-Jewish field up in Syria, and the deal is that 25% of the produce belongs to him. That's his compensation. Okay? So, Rabbi Eliezer, he holds that Mechayev Peraseim Kamaiser Svishvias. He holds it that the produce grown in Chutz La'aretz, in Syria, are obligated in the tithes just like Eretz Yisrael. In other words, he holds it's just like Eretz Yisrael will be the case, so too in Chutz La'aretz. So too in Syria. No difference. You'll recall there's a machlokas. This is so complicated. You'll recall there's a machlokas Tanaim if land owned by non-Jew in Israel is even chayav. So this obviously he's going like the Tana holds that non-Jewish land in Israel is still chayav in hafrashos, obviously, right? And he's saying just like in Eretz Yisrael, if a non-Jew owned the land and a Jew worked it, it'd be chayav in tithing. So too, if it's in Syria and a non-Jew owns the land but a Jew is working on it, so it'll be chayav because it's as if it's like Eretz Yisrael rabbinically. And Rabban Gamliel Poter, Rabban Gamliel says no, it doesn't go that far. He agrees, of course, that Syria is like Eretz Yisrael, Mizrabanan, rabbinically, but not to the point that if a non-Jew owns land outside of Israel, that we're going to treat it as if it's in Israel. So in this case, since it's non-Jewishly owned land, then it's outside of Israel and Syria, the fact that a Jew happens to be working on it, that's going too far, he says, and in such a case, it will be exempt. So in other words, if a Jew owned the land in Syria, it would be chayav, Mizrabanan, but since a non-Jew owns it, he exempts. Okay, Rabban Gamliel Omer, Shtei Chalos Basuria, he says, and therefore, well, I don't know, therefore. A new point. We'll tie him up in the end. He says a separate related point. The rabbis went around and said that when it comes outside of Israel, the land of Israel, so the land itself is all Tameh. The reason why is because in Israel, Jews who are worried about Tumah and Tahara mark their graves carefully, but in outside of Israel, like everyone buries their dead relatives in their backyard, and what can happen is over time, you know, who knows what's buried where. So they just said, forget it. In Israel, we're keeping track of things. In Chutz La'aretz, forget it. We don't know who's buried where. The whole of the world is Tameh. We're going to treat all of it as Tameh, Midrabanan. So that would apply also to Syria. So that being the case, question mark. So if Rabban Gamliel says, yes, that applies to Syria also. And therefore, you have to give Shtei Chalos B'Syria. You give Chala twice in Syria. Why? The first Chala you take, because it's Chayav, he's treating it like Eretz Yisrael, and it'll be Chayav Midrabanan. But then it'll be Tameh, because everyone in Syria is Tameh, like the rest of the world. So you have to burn it. Like what we do today, we burn the challah. But he's afraid if everyone's always burning the challah for the next 2,000 years, so that people will forget the fact that challah is supposed to go to a Kohen. They'll think it goes in the fire. So therefore he says you give a second batch to the Kohen to remember that you shouldn't burn it. But that batch, of course, isn't really challah. It's pretend challah. So therefore it's not really, so the Kohen can eat at that part. Because it's just regular food, you just as a reminder. That's how he sets it up. And Rabbi Eliezer says that's ridiculous. Chal achas, he says, no way. He says that the tumah that the rabbi has decreed on the whole world over doesn't apply to Syria. That's going too far. Syria is like Eretz Yisrael, and therefore only one chal is required because it's not tameh. Fine. So now keep cheshbon is the last step in the mission here. It's a little complicated. So you have two arguments between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yochanan. In the first one, Rabbi Eliezer said that you have to be strict on your land in Chutz La'aretz, as if it's Israel. And Rabbi Gamliel was lenient. And the second one, Rabbi Gamliel is strict. He says you got to take challah twice. And Rabbi Eliezer is lenient. Okay, so what the historical story is? Achazu kulo shel Rabbi Gamliel v'kulo shel Rabbi Eliezer. So the locals in Syria said these rabbis are making us crazy. Forget it. We're doing. If they're arguing about it, we'll go lenient both ways. So they're lenient, treating like Rabban Gamliel, that the land in Chutzar in Syria is considered like Chutzarts, and they're not taking any challahs if a non-Jew owns it. And if a Jew owns it, they're only taking challah once, and that's the end of that. They're wiping the hands of all these complexities. I don't blame them, it's a little complicated, right? But then, of course, the rabbis found that one out. They said, no way, you can't do that. It's not an issue of who they went before and against, but you can't adopt two opinions that are contradicting one to the other. One is assuming Surya is like Eretz Yisrael, one is assuming it isn't like Eretz Yisrael. That you can't do. Goren Erev and Davav says, people have their prerogative of choosing which shita they want to go by, but you can't take shitas that contradict one to the other. That's just being you don't care about doing the right thing, then you're just trying to get the easy way out. So again, they don't have a problem with you doing going the easy way out if you think that's true, but here you obviously don't believe it's true, you're just going the easy way out. That's no good. And therefore, Chazru Lino Kadivri Rabban Gamliel B'shtei Durachim. They said, we're going like Rabban Gamliel across the board. Rabban Gamliel really, for the most part, is the lenient opinion, because he says Chutz La'aretz is not like Surya is not like Eretz Yisrael. So besides the slight factor of taking two challahs, it's otherwise much more lenient, and therefore that comes to the halacha, like Rabban Gamliel, that Surya has a din in many ways not like Eretz Yisrael, and you can be lenient in many ways. But when it comes to challah, you take challah twice. And Bizman Azeb, we don't even do that, by the way, right? Okay, we'll stop there.